So, Sans, we're back.
It's Hello, everyone. Season two. How exciting.
I know. Season two, episode one.
And we thought we didn't have a, we thought we'd have a cliffhanger for season one, but we do.
So, for those who don't know what we're talking about, we had a couple of things go down, and that was about a day before I was due to fly back to Doha. Mm-hmm. I went for a mammogram, and I had only gone because I'd been at the doctor's. I'd taken the kids to the doctor's and had all their bits and pieces all checked out and sort of filed them in one by one. And then right at the end, the GP sort of said to me, "What about you? Is there anything for you?" And, you know, I probably wouldn't have even said it, but I had to sort of think, well, what about me? Have I had any issues? And I said, oh, look, I had this sort of fatty tissue thing under my arm, but they checked it out in Doha and it's fine. And she thankfully said, let me have a look at it, and demanded that I go for a mammogram the next day.
Right.
And I tried to put her off and tried to tell her that, no, that didn't really fit because I had more important things to do, like pack up the house and go for lunch with my girlfriend.
Get your year supply of tampons from Woolies.
Get my year supply of tampons, you know, a couple more jars of Vegemite. Few licorice bullets. And anyway, I went off for the mammogram, which I nearly cancelled, and it turned out, I was so close to just not going because it all seemed a bit too hard with people watching the kids while I went off, and it was the last day, and, you know, all that stuff.
It was just too much of a hassle.
That was it. And, you know, because I was so sure that this thing was just a fatty cyst. Anyway, it turns out it was. It was just that.
Okay.
But on my other boob, they found a lump. And so it was just everything kind of spiraled from there. It was we found a lump because they knew I was getting on a plane on the Sunday.
Yeah.
They were very pushy about, no, we think it's cancer. And I kept saying to them, but how do you know? Like, don't you have to send it off for a biopsy and do this and do that? But because they knew I was getting on a plane, she said, look, we know what cancer looks like, and that definitely looks like cancer. You should not be getting on a plane. And so within the next couple of hours, I had been to a breast surgeon and been back and had, you know, the biopsy and been to my GP, and all of a sudden I was cursed with breast cancer.
Did it feel like the whole world just broke out? Did everything go in slow motion?
Yeah, everything.
Like, did it feel like you were everything else around? I don't know how to put into it, but I just, how did it all feel? Like, did you seeing the world differently? Did it feel like, you know, when you fall, everything goes into slow motion, everything flashes before it, did that happen?
Yeah, that's a great analogy. Like, when you fall, it does go into slow motion. It kind of, I think, if anything, says I just found it all initially really inconvenient. Do you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just, because the kids were starting school on the Sunday and, or the Tuesday, that's right, the kids were starting school on the Tuesday, you know, we were due to fly out. It was
the holiday,
just
like, was over.
Well,
you're
this
going
isn't going to work.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah, yeah. And I just kept thinking, well, this can't happen this way because this isn't going to work because we've all got to go back to Doha, and I can't be having breast cancer like this. So it wasn't that it slowed down at all.
And do you think all because you're the mum?
Yes. Yeah.
You're the mum. You're the wife. You're not supposed to get sick. You're supposed to be there for everyone. You're supposed to pick up the pieces of everyone else's problems. You're not supposed to have your own problem. Does that come into play?
There's been so many different kind of emotions all the way through. But, I mean, the good news is that I have now booked my ticket to go back to Doha, and I'm tying up all my loose ends this week. I've seen the oncologist and I know what sort of treatment I have to have. And so I'm going to be back with my family as of Sunday night, which to
fantastic.
Me is just fantastic. Like, the minute that ticket was booked.
I'm sorry.
And I knew I had a plan.
Sorry. Sorry. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. That's fine. You're allowed to cry. You're allowed to cry.
No, I'm good. So, I've pulled myself together. Go.
Oh, Suze, it's been funny times, hasn't it? It's just been so bizarre.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think because you've been in Australia and I've been here in Doha, and we actually don't have a lot of mutual friends. We sort of have our own social lives, but I think people have been messaging me, have been texting. It's almost like I should have known every single thing. The amount of messages that I've been getting from people that may not know you, but follow your blog, but know me, it's, yeah, I think when you get back, it'll be, I don't know, we're back together again, and I don't know how to,
yeah,
how to,
yeah,
put into it. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And maybe for those listening, I think people probably assume that you and I hang out together all the time, and we don't. We very much do the podcast and we do worky stuff together, but we have very separate social lives. Yeah. But we love each other.
Yeah.
You know, we absolutely. I think that's why we really love each other, is because we just have a good giggle and work together and do fun things together.
We're work wives.
Yeah, we call each other our work wives. So, yes, it has been really weird and really strange to not be talking to you on a weekly basis about it. And I imagine you probably have had, because I have had now probably into the thousands of messages and texts and beautiful, I mean, people are just genuinely beautiful in situations like this. I've had so many lovely, lovely things written and said. So I imagine you've had it too, of people wanting updates from you.
Yeah, I've always almost feel like I'm your best. People are wanting to know what treatment you're having and what's this happening. Why isn't she back in Doha with her family? I'm like, it's none of your business. That's what I kind of want to say. You know what I mean? Like, it's her do her thing.
So let's talk about what our episode today. So obviously with the situation that we have going on, we figured, well, I asked you if it was okay if we did an episode on expat cancer, because the thing that really became apparent to me when all of this went down is that even cancer is different for
Absolutely.
The expat. So I wanted to talk about the sort of things, what those additional issues are, because obviously you have to think about where you're going to have your treatment, how you're going to break the news to your family, how to keep people in the know who are sort of thousands of miles away, because that's a really big issue.
And I think
when
also
is it
to
time
give
to go home
help to people that, you know, 2 weeks after you diagnosed, a really close friend of Matt and I, she was diagnosed with bowel cancer, and she's back in Australia and we're here. And I think we'd been back in Australia, we would have been up, we would have been taking care of the kids, we would have been helping her husband, but we're a million miles away, and it's really hard to know what you can do for a friend or a family member when you're living on opposite sides of the world. So I think we should, maybe you could give advice on how to deal with that as well.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. And also, you know, expats have to ask each other, do they have adequate healthcare where they are? And that was a big thing for me. I didn't.
Do you have
know.
Insurance? Does your insurance cover it?
That's right. And also, the one thing that I think a lot of people don't think about is that expats are primarily worker bees. Mm-hmm. Like, you have been employed to do a specific job. So maybe you're actually there to build a project or implement a system, and you have been employed solely for that reason. So sometimes with expat employments, people aren't maybe as understanding, because they're like, well, I pay you X to do this job, and if you can't do this job for the next 6 months, I don't know whether this is the place for you to be. And it sounds brutal, but it's the reality.
Yeah, and at the end of the day,
it's
a company that's there to make money and to do a job.
That's right. So this week I interviewed quite a few people, but I've focused in on sort of two interviews that I really loved. And one is a woman called Kristen, who's a mother of four in Singapore. And it was quite funny, because when I went to interview Kristen, I was actually on the phone to Henry Hot Dog, because Henry Hot Dog FaceTimes me about 10 times a day just to show me different things that are going on around the house.
Oh, my God, I love that kid.
I know. So he just has me there while he eats his breakfast, and then he carries me into his fort that he's made. And my favourite thing yesterday was He goes, now, how am I going to explain to you how big my four is, Mum? It's kind of me and another me and maybe half a me.
Oh, bless him. Love him.
Anyway, I had to cut Henry short and say, I'm going to go and speak to Kristen because she's in Singapore and she's got four children and she has breast cancer. And he said, oh, find out if she has a beagle, then you'll be exactly the same. Anyway, Kristen doesn't
have a beagle. And does she have a beagle? Is it is your doppelganger living in Singapore?
No. She said she hated to let Henry Hot Dog down, but she's only got a cat. Anyway, I thought maybe we could have a listen to Kristen because I think it's just interesting to hear sort of how she discovered that she had breast cancer and what she decided to do. So we'll just have a quick listen to Kristen now.
Okay. I had a routine mammogram scheduled and I've kind of felt something on my rib, but I thought it was part of my rib because it was just a very hard, tiny little thing on my rib and it didn't move, so I thought it was part of my rib. But I had a mammogram scheduled anyway, so I didn't panic and I just went for the normal mammogram. The mammogram turned into two mammograms and an ultrasound. And as we were finishing up, the ultrasound technician basically said to me, this was a Saturday morning, and she said to me, your doctor will either call you this afternoon, or if you haven't heard from them by Monday lunchtime, call them. And at that point, I knew something was wrong.
And was it breast cancer, Kristen?
Yes, it was. It is.
So you find out from the doctor that you have breast cancer, and what happens next? What do they suggest that you do from there?
This is the really good thing about Singapore, is that everything just kicks off immediately. There's no hanging around. So I spoke to my doctor Monday lunchtime. I saw the oncologist, the surgical oncologist, on Tuesday, and he said it is cancer. I've seen enough that I know that this is cancer, but they need to do all the tests so that they can see how far it's gone. So I had the biopsy the next day, the PET scan the day after that, the results of both of those 48 hours after that, and then a week later I was having a mastectomy. So it all really ran at a pace.
And was there any stage where you thought, I've got to get home, or I've got to get out of here, or were you feeling, no, I'm in the right place for me?
I'm actually really pleased that we are where we are, because back home, the treatment, it's a bit of a postcode lottery, right, depending on where you live and what's available. And also the standard at home is that from the first referral from your GP, you should be sort of seeing your specialist within 60 days. That's a long time to be hanging around.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, 60 days, it's a huge amount of time when you know that something's wrong. And I know that as soon as they said to me that I had breast cancer and I knew there was this little lump and I could just about feel it, and it was one of four tumors that I had, but I didn't know about the other three. I couldn't stop touching it.
Yes.
As soon as I knew it was there, I knew what it was. I couldn't stop touching it, and I just wanted them to get it out as fast as possible.
Yeah.
So I was actually, from the get-go, I was really glad that we are where we are because we could just get on with it. So I've got stage 2 invasive ductal carcinoma. So I was quite lucky in that it's still classified as, stage 2 still classified as early stages. The rush for me was because my tumors are grade 3. So they were worried because my tumors were already showing signs that they were going to, I guess, go on their travels any minute now. And I was lucky. It's, my cancer is hormone positive, but it's HER2 negative.
Right.
Which is apparently, in terms of the kind of cancer you can get, it's not bad. So that was cool.
How are you finding the treatment with having four children and having to sort of get through family life as well?
It's been tough at times, to be completely honest. And what we did, because it actually, for us, it came my treatment started at the start of expat home leave, which meant that everyone was leaving and we were supposed to be leaving too, and clearly didn't. But we brought family members over, and we picked a couple of family members who we knew would be just able to handle the kids when I wasn't able to be around and had enough energy. And I guess I just, people that we trusted would be able to look after the children when I wasn't able to get out of bed. So we had family over for the whole 8 weeks of AC, because I had my AC once every 2 weeks. And they really helped, because there were days when I really was not able to look after the children at all. I wasn't able to get out of bed for very long at all. There are times when I'm just very tired. I think it comes down to an awful lot of military precision planning to try and make sure that everything carries on going while I'm not 100%, and pulling in quite a few of the mothers of the kids' friends who helped out with pickups from CCAs and transporting children to parties or play dates or after school activities or whatever needs to be done, really, so that they can pick up the extras when I'm getting too tired.
Yeah. And how have the children coped with it all?
They've all coped very differently. I think, you know, the younger ones, they're really lucky. My 4-year-old and my 8-year-old, so much of it is passing them by, in that this is the new normal. They don't fully understand all the ramifications, and that's a blessing for them. So for now, this is their new normal, and once this is over, there will be a new normal again. And that's really quite nice for them, because, you know, it's not such a big deal. My youngest talks a lot about the fact that I've lost my hair and when my hair will grow back.
That is the biggest fascination, isn't it? Like, I'm amazed with... Even with me, Kristen, it's the first question people ask me is, are you going to lose your hair? And then the hair thing becomes a thing. And I think it's becoming a thing for me now, because it's becoming a thing for everybody else.
I think it's because it's such a visual symbol.
Yes.
And, you know, it's funny, because what we did with my hair, because I have a 10 and 11-year-old as well, and they're both more impacted and much more anxious and much more upset and much more needing discussions about what's happening and what's happening next and where are we at and reassurance that it's going to be okay. But what I ended up doing with my hair, because I used to have really long hair and they've always known me with really long hair. So we had a session after my first AC treatment, once I was back out of bed. We sat down in front of a big mirror with a load of hair chalk, and they colored in my hair every which color they could, and then we shaved it really short.
Right.
And that, it kind of helped me as well, because my hair was starting to come out, and although I'm not massively precious about it, I mean, living in Singapore, it's really hot. I was always putting it up anyway because it was boiling. But I needed to feel like I was losing my hair on my terms.
Yeah.
And so we did that partly for the children, for the transition, because they were upset about my hair too, because they've only ever known me with long hair, but partly also for me, because so much of what was going on was outside of my control and I needed to feel like I own this. And I actually, it's funny, once the hair had gone, I wasn't as bothered as I thought I was going to be. My eyebrows and my eyelashes are going now, and that's bothering me a lot more.
Yes. Oh, it's just all such fun, isn't it?
There's a whole world out there of glamour opportunities and caterpillar-style eyebrows and all kinds of things, you know, stick on nipples.
Yeah.
All kinds of things you had no idea you would need ever in your life.
Well, first, I'm going to sound quite ignorant here, but I found when you hear stories of breast cancer and when you have to check yourself, it always to me seems that it's on the breast and in your armpit. That's what comes into my mind. But I found it really interesting that you actually felt something near her ribs. That's something that I hadn't realised could... That actually blew mind a little bit.
Yes,
Because I feel like it's kind of... Well, my boobs hang right over my ribs when I'm not wearing a... But I just... They hang more towards knees, but I just felt that's not an area you should be checking. I always you know, when I do my month check, it's always around my pits and on the, you know, the actual boob, not around the rib area.
Yes, yes. No, that's a really, really good point. And the fact that she could, she sort of said that she thought it was part of her rib. Which is interesting because Kristen is very fit too. Like she ran every day and she's sort of was very fit and thin and healthy. And so, yeah, the fact that she could feel it and just sort of thought, oh, I think it's part of my rib was really interesting.
Which I think is also a big thing to point out, and I think we'll talk this a little bit later in the episode, but cancer isn't racist and it's not prejudice. It just goes to anyone. So it doesn't matter if you're tall, athletic, thin, fat, what have you, cancer's going to make its way to you if it's meant to be that way. Do you know what I mean? And I think we've seen on your blog's Facebook page that there's been quite a few comments on how you can cure cancer and all of this thing. But I think people need to know that it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That's right.
And cancer isn't just, it's not prejudice. Yeah. It happens.
Yeah, it's a really funny thing that people do that, isn't it? Because I think there's kind of this implication that if you haven't eaten organic raw food and not drank and exercised and whatever, that you kind of deserved it in a funny way, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think if the people who thought that actually went to a clinic and saw the people that were there, they would discover that, you know, there are plenty of vegetarians and non-drinkers and healthy people.
People that have never smoked a cigarette in their life can still get lung cancer.
That's right. And that is the sucky, completely unfair thing about breast cancer. And I think, I don't know if people realise how hurtful they are when they say things like that, because it shouldn't be about this is what you need to do and this is how you need to do it. It should just be, I really care about you and I'm really sorry that this is happening to you.
Yeah. The thing with Kristen, and I think being an expat, the first person that I would look to call to come and look after Sadie would be parents. But I found it really interesting that Kristen said that it was more the people that were capable of looking after four children, one of which is 4 years age. So maybe your parents who might be elderly are not the right people to come out and help. And I found that really interesting because as a daughter, I would just want my mum. But that actually might not be the best situation, that I might need someone who's younger and more fit and what have to look after children. So I found that really interesting that Kristen said that over the 8 weeks that they had family come in, that was really who was going to be best at looking after the kids.
Yep, that's exactly right. And, you know, I adore my mum and I love spending time with her, but she gets quite emotional about the whole thing. She is gets quite teary and you know, she was the hardest phone call to make when I got the news, because I knew that it was just, well, I know how I would feel if it was my daughter ringing me, and I just knew that she just was going to be really upset. But even, you know, this morning I rang to tell her really happy news and somehow she ended up in tears again. But and I said to her, Mum, this is a happy call. Remember, I'm calling you with happy news. This is a good one. And she's like, oh, yes, I know. But, you know, so, yeah, sometimes it's just the people that love you the most maybe aren't.
You need a practical approach, yes.
The most optimistic people.
Yeah.
Like, I have a very good friend, Fiona, who I spoke to last night about sort of something unrelated, and she said to me, are you going to be in town this week? And I said, yes, I'm going to come in. I need to go and buy a wig. And we hadn't talked about cancer at all, and straight off the cuff she said, oh, well, that'll be easy for you because you've got kind of wig hair anyway. And it's true. And
actually, she's a bit spot on. You do have wig hair.
I know, because I have, you know, very
thick, and it just sits
straight. In her, yes, and in her words, you've got the Doris Day wig. You know, that's your hair.
Almost Lego hair. Lego hair.
Yes.
It just sits.
And that's what my mum says.
I haven't thought about that before.
Yes, when I wake up in the morning, I very rarely brush my hair. I just give it a shake and it all just sort of
goes
sits
back
there.
Into place.
And yes.
Whereas I end up looking like I've been in the boxing ring with Mike Tyson.
her saying that to me was hysterically funny and really good and a good laugh. And I think that's, you want people to just keep talking to you how they would normally talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want it to all be sad and miserable and I'm so sad and I'm so miserable.
It is really hard to know. Well, I mean, you are the first person that I know that I'm close to, that I'm friends with, has said to me, I have cancer. And I think my initial reaction was actually what I typed back, and that was holy F word.
Yes.
And that is actually what came out of my mouth when I read your message was holy F word. You don't know what to say. You don't know what to say, and you don't want to say the wrong thing, but you know you have to say something, because if you don't, do you know, I think people's initial reaction is you just want to, okay, can you just take back what you said and rewind, because I don't want to know that. I don't want to have to deal with that. I think that's what people think. And I think people either overcompensate, and I think I did that at the beginning. I think, you know, after I found out, every 10 minutes I was like, are you okay? I'm thinking about you. And then you're like, well, that's just not really helping anyone. And then we've just carried on with our work, and we've been talking almost on a daily basis about work. And I've even called it the cancer in messages to you. After I was like, what the hell did you just say that? But we've had a laugh about it. It's really hard to know what to say when you're not there, and I can't at the moment do practical things. Do you know what I mean? When we're in Australia and it's really hard to know what to say. So it's good getting that information from someone that's going through it to give advice on and what they. And I don't think people should be sensitive and get personally if you find out that you've maybe said the wrong thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think people can't, also don't be offended if your friend doesn't ring you and tell you that they have cancer.
And you know what? That was the thing that happened with our friend in Australia at the moment. She didn't ring and tell us. We found out on Facebook. And at first, Matt was like, oh, I can't believe she didn't call us. And then we're like, hang on a second. This is happening to her. This is happening to her husband. This is happening to her kids. We need to take ourselves out of that and just be there as much as we can.
Yeah.
And look,
there's a fantastic article, and I'll have to link it on our website. But a girlfriend sent it to me, and it's a story about a woman saying about how, you know, it's the husband's point of view, and he's saying about how his wife was in hospital after having surgery, and one of her work colleagues came in to see her, and he said to the work colleague, oh, look, she really doesn't sort of feel like seeing anyone right now. And the colleague said, well, she needs to understand that this cancer isn't just about her. And I think I have done the same thing, says, with what you said about you and Matt with your friend. I also had another friend who had cancer, and I was really wounded about sort of not finding out till a little bit later. And, you know, because you think, well, I'm one of your closest friends. Why haven't you rang? And now that it's happened to me, I can tell you exactly why you don't get the phone call. And that is because you're trying to process it yourself. It is so hard delivering the news, because it's a real Debbie Downer sentence to give out.
Yeah.
And you know that you're about to kill the conversation, and that there's going to be about 2 or 3 minutes where people are like, I'm so sorry, and, you know, oh my gosh, and what are you going to do, and blah, blah, blah. And then you're going to get back to normal. And so, particularly these days.
You have to do that so many times as well.
Yes, yeah. And you've got to do it over and over again.
Yeah.
And, you know, in one of our interviews, I think the following one with Emma, she talked about how they kind of couldn't believe that they were putting all this stuff up on Facebook, because they weren't those types of people, but it just became so much easier to put it up on Facebook. And
so is that because you went public quite quickly? Was that a decision that you were just, right, this is the easiest way to tell everyone?
Yeah, I went public quickly because we were kind of forced to, because we were due to get on a plane and fly out.
And you weren't getting on a plane.
That's right, and my kids weren't going to be at school.
And people were going to question.
And, yeah, and Greg and I have talked about this a lot, about whether I would have been public had that happened while we'd been in Doha, and I don't know if I would have, because for us, we had to tell everyone, because everybody was expecting that we were packing up on the plane on our way, and instead what was actually going to happen was Greg was going to get on a plane and come back to Australia. I was not going anywhere, and the kids were about to miss the first week and a half of school. So we just knew that everyone was going to find out.
You know how Doha rumours work.
That's right. That's right. So it was really, okay, we have to put this out there because, yeah, somebody's going to find out who.
Expat, that is, makes it different with being an expat. When that does happen in a situation where you're supposed to be somewhere and you're not, you know, I think expats might have to be more public and upfront with it, because you've got people everywhere that are, you know, aren't seeing in your day-to-day life. And, yeah, I understand why you did it now.
Yeah, yeah. So going back to what to say and what not to say, I thought it was interesting. I asked Kristen what were some of the best things that people said or did for her when they found out the news. And she was saying, and this is something I've realised too, is when you are diagnosed, you have so many decisions to make about treatment and what you're going to do and logistics of things. And so it's kind of nice to have some decisions taken away from you. And so it's really nice, instead of saying to someone, let me know if there's anything I can do, like, do not say that. That would be my advice, because nobody, I mean, how often do people ring you and say, oh, you know how you said if there was anything I wanted, well, now I'm actually ringing you to ask you for something. Yeah. You know, you don't do it. You tend not to ask people to help you. Whereas people that just come and say, I know Lizzie has to get to softball practice on Thursday night, so why don't I take her and I'll bring her home? That's what I'd like to do.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of stuff is really great. Or if someone says, okay, every Wednesday night I'm going to deliver a meal. Mm-hmm. Or Kristen said she has one girlfriend that says, every week I'm taking you out for a cup of coffee and getting you out of the house and getting you home. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So, and I know, Sarah, like you said to me, I'll show you how to paint do your eyebrows. And that was really
good. I am in charge of eyebrows and the Lego wig.
Yes, and that was really
good. But I also like to see you wear a scarf.
That is one of, right, okay. So, but that was one of the things that was worrying me, is I don't know how to do fake eyebrows.
But
and
I do.
So to have someone say,
I have fake eyebrows, people.
So to have someone say, I will do that for you, is so good, because I know that the day when I go to Sephora and buy my fake eyebrow applicators, I will be calling you and saying, Sarah, come and show me how to do this.
Go eyebrow shopping.
Yes. Yeah. I have a girlfriend in London who basically wakes up every morning and sends me a little note, like a little paragraph. And it might be the most boring as batshit stuff that she's done that day, but that's her way of doing it, right? She'll say, oh, I went for a run today and I did this and I noticed the such and such flowers were out and, you know, such and such fell over the garbage bin and this and this and this happened. But that's her way of doing it. And I was thinking that's almost to me nicer than the thinking of you.
Yeah,
do you know?
Yeah.
Because I know they're thinking of me because they've sent me a note, but they're talking to me just normally about
everyday life,
day by day. And I think one of the things that Kristen said when she was talking is that in her interview, and I didn't, because Kristen and I talked for about 45 minutes and I only got to use about 10 minutes of the interview, but we had a really good laugh about different things about cancer and things that we didn't know before we had it. And for her, she's that bit further down in the treatment. But she said one of the things that annoys her is people that hold back from telling her the shitty things that are going on in their life because they kind of feel that she's had enough and she doesn't need to hear whatever.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, she wants to say to them, you know, you have to tell me the terrible things that are going on in your life. You know, I'm an adult and I can decide if it's too much for me.
Yeah.
You know, but I still want to talk to you normally and I still want to know what's happening to you.
And that's good to know, because I think most people would feel, oh, I better not tell her that because she's already got enough on her.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, it's not the case at all. People want life to go on as normally as they can. Okay.
Yeah, and you still want to be a supportive friend to your friends.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay, so I also spoke to Emma, and Emma was fantastic for me to talk to because she is in Doha, and all of her story happens in Doha, which, you know, I was really interested in because I'm going back to Doha to have treatment.
And that was the main question. That was the question I was asked the most: is staying home or is she having treatment in Doha? And people are really surprised that you're coming back to Doha.
Yeah. And, you know, I understand why they are, because my initial thoughts too were that I would stay in Australia and have the treatment, because you have this idea in your head that the treatment will be
exactly
better.
Don't you think often of security with Australia? Do you know what I mean? You just, well, I'm Australian. I should be having my treatment in Australia with Australian doctors and rah-de-rah-de-rah. Do you think it's that?
Yeah, and also a comfort level. I think what else happens is when you're in the medical system? I guess when you're in the medical system in Doha, one of the hardest things to deal with is the administrative side.
Absolutely.
You know, like a lot of people don't realise, like in Australia, if you go into the doctors, you ring up, you make an appointment with Dr. Smith, they tell you to come at 3:30, you arrive, you maybe wait around in the waiting room for half an hour or an hour or whatever, but you will see Dr. Smith and then you will go home. Whereas in Doha, you have to go there in the morning, take your ticket and wait.
Yeah.
And you could be waiting for hours and hours and hours and there's no appointments and it's all really difficult. And one of the things I've realised from asking around is that Doha has a fantastic cancer treatment centre that they tell me is really lovely and really well staffed. And really, from after talking to my oncologist, what I realised was that with chemotherapy, you basically get your recipe. You know, there's so many different types of
cocktail for you, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. And there's so many different types of chemo you can have, which is one reason why if you ever hear someone say they've got breast cancer, one of the reasons you should probably hold back on saying, oh, yes, you know, my auntie had breast cancer and she just went for radiation and then she had, you know, drugs for the next whatever and then she was fine, because everybody is different.
Yeah.
Some people are going to have chemo where there's a constant pick line in their arm and they carry around a little, you know, bum bag, or as the Americans would say, fanny pack.
Fanny pack.
And some people just go once every 3 weeks and have it put in them for a couple of hours and then they go away. And some people don't even need to have
chemo. That's right.
Because there's so many different types of breast cancer.
Chemo are tailor-made for you.
That's right. So really, because I know what I'm getting, I can now go to Doha with all my scans and all my stuff and say, this is what has been suggested that I have and then go ahead and have it in Doha.
So basically,
and then
you've got haute couture cancer. It is made as a one-off haute couture.
So it means that I get to be with my family. And the other thing about having medical care in Qatar is if you have a visa and you are a resident in Qatar, it's all free through your your Qatar health system.
And you know what I've also said, people, is we live in the richest country in the world, so they're going to have the best of the best, because expats that are getting cancer here, the locals are getting cancer here. And I can tell you now, they will want, if they're driving around on Lamborghinis, they will want the best of the best when it comes to cancer.
Yes. And so
it was the same when Matt and I were doing all of our fertility treatments. Because of all the genetic research that goes on here, we were getting the best of the best.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. So why don't we have a listen to Emma? Because her situation is a little bit different in that it was her husband that was diagnosed with cancer, which I think is something we need to think about as well, is that it might not be you that gets cancer, it might be your partner. And then
yeah.
what happens if something like that happens to your partner? How do you go through it? So shall we just have a listen to Emma and we'll hear her story.
Okay.
My husband got diagnosed with lymphoma in January of this year.
And how did the diagnosis come about?
In December last year, he had an incident where there was a pretty short time period onset of swelling in his left leg. And initially we went through emergency departments and medical centres when they thought it was a DVT. And when the blood test ruled that out, they... you know, look for doing a CT scan. Once, I guess, they'd ruled out the DVT, it became less urgent for them. And we kind of went through this phase of not really knowing or not being urgent and not thinking it was this massive priority anymore. So we went away on our Christmas holidays to the UK, and on New Year's Eve, Mike had his CT scan. So by the end of the first week in January, we knew there was a mass there. And then we went to a private hospital here in Doha who looked to do a biopsy. Maybe about the 10th of January we knew it was lymphoma, but the rest of the process of getting the information out of the private hospital was excruciatingly slow before we could really commence treatment at the National Centre for Cancer Care and Research.
And so was there... ever a moment where you both said, you know, let's just get on a plane and go home?
A few times. you know, when we were at the hospital and they said it was a mass, they said, one of the doctors said, what are you doing here still? and then when the private hospital was just making such a mess with the pathology, having... not being able to tell us where results and things were, and they were somewhere between here and Germany. Yeah, there was that point. But we kind of, at that point, we were saying, we'll hold on and we'll get the full information, find out what we're up against, because we don't really have a home to go to. You know, if we'd gone to Australia, we probably would have gone to Brisbane, where we have a house still, but we've got people living in our house. We would have had to bunk in with someone else, probably my parents, who are in a small house. And if Mike's parents in the UK, they live in the middle of nowhere, basically in North Yorkshire, and so going and staying with them wasn't an option either. And then when we finally got through the pathology, the treatment plan seemed pretty straightforward, that we thought that we'd start and go with it, and the confidence that the staff at the cancer centre had wore off on us, I guess, and so we decided to stay, and yeah, we're glad we did. Mike had 7 cycles of treatment, you know, basically with chemotherapy with a few other drugs, and they were on a 21-day cycle. He'd be in for a day, and then he would kind of be okay that week, and then the week after was the risk kind of week, and then he'd kind of be picking up towards the end, and before the next cycle commenced. I mean, he had a few other, you know, drugs and things along with that, but that's kind of the basic of his treatment cycle.
How did, I guess, does Mike have a full-time job in Qatar?
Yes.
And
yes,
so how did that all play out?
When he got his treatment plan, he went and spoke to the company he works for, who are an American company, and, you know, was honest and told them what the situation was going to be, and that he didn't really know how much he would need in terms of leave. And they gave him what his options were in terms of leaves, in terms of the medical leave he could have. And then beyond that, that they could offer 2 more months of half pay, or that he could use, and other options such as, you know, using up his annual leave, or, you know, working into his gratuity payment even. We are really, really lucky or fortunate with, I guess, you know, not fortunate in what we've come here and landed with, but we both do still feel very fortunate. Mike had an amazing run through his chemotherapy and, you know, defied expectations with his ability to continue to work, and how little time he actually needed off.
How did family cope with the news? Because, you know, they're miles away.
How did they cope?
It was very stressful on both our families, and I think they found it hard not being here and being around us. You do, I think, assume that you know, you need those type of people in your life all the time. We found that there were other people who kind of filled those gaps, fortunately, even though we hadn't been here long. People have been very caring and generous. So we just kind of kept giving regular updates. And because of how well Mike did, we managed without the family. I mean, it's not something you'd choose. Had we known what was coming towards us, we wouldn't have moved here. You know, we managed through just phone calls, or I was constantly on WhatsApp with my mum and my sister, and we were Facebooking and messaging friends, and we got such a lot of support that way that it was just the right amount for us, that we weren't too overwhelmed by it, that we could still kind of keep trying to on track with our children feeling like life was still normal.
And what about your expat friends? Do you feel that there are people you are now infinitely closer to, or are there people that you realise you weren't as great of friends as you thought you were?
No, I've had no negative kind of experiences from it. I think people who are expats know how wonderful expat friends are, that, you know, that you in these situations, and people do go out of their way for more so than you would if you were in your home country, for people you don't know so well. So sometimes, almost as I was meeting someone, I was having to tell them that my husband was sick, but the reaction from everyone has been amazingly supportive. I haven't had anyone who hasn't been helpful, or, you know, offering to help, or wanting to go that extra way for you. So there's no one I feel like it's had a negative effect on the friendship. You know, the thing, it was such an awful time waiting for the treatment to begin, but we almost celebrated the day. I was just so almost happy. The day Mike started his treatment and chemotherapy was just like a turning moment in terms of the stress about it. Mm-hmm. Being able to start the fight and to start going on the positive track to getting rid of it was such an amazing day. It just changed for us. It was good to feel that, you know, that way.
And Emma, how's it affected your relationship?
It's probably improved our relationship. We're easier on each other. We don't let little things, you know, get in the way of things that you or hold any grudges and things about. We probably improved our communication. You know, there's no point being grumpy with someone who you realise that much you love and, you know, and want them to be around. I mean, yeah. So much, it's everything, isn't it?
Did you ever think the worst? Did you ever think, oh, my gosh, here I am in Qatar and my husband's really sick, and what are we going to do? How are we going to get out of here?
Yes. I did. When we didn't know what we were up against and what we were fighting, I didn't sleep for a couple of weeks, and, you know, I'd doze off and then I'd wake up at the start, and I was waking up and not knowing, and I'd be reaching over and taking his pulse in the night or just listening so I could hear him breathing to be sure that it was okay. And, you know, thinking about, well, when we didn't know how much it was cost, are we going to be selling our house in Australia? Am I going to be a single, you know, single mum, and what's going to happen to me, and where am I going to go, and is Mike's company going to help me get out of the country, and what, you know, is that going to be a financial burden to us? Yeah, went through all that. It hasn't changed my perception. Am I frightened of other things? Yes, I'm extremely fearful of all things, all those things that as a mum that you worry might happen. I worry about maybe 3 or 4 times the amount, or, you know, something, you know, it's about the, just, you know, you, I'm waiting for the next terrible thing to happen, I think. That's the kind of current situation. When we were back in Australia, we had a mole scan appointment, and both Mike and I had a couple of moles taken off, and you know, we've had that before. I've had a mole taken off and sent for pathology and not worried about it, but I couldn't sleep until I got the results this time around. I was just sure that something was going to happen, and I was almost thinking I should delay coming back to Qatar in case I needed to have something, you know, started or treated on that. Before you have a diagnosis like that, you think it is your nightmare, isn't it?
Mm.
That having that diagnosis, and you wake up and then everything keeps going, and then you realise, well, it can be, there's so many grades of the worst ever thing that can happen that you kind of, yeah. Just wait for it.
I know a lot of people just don't know how to react when people tell them their cancer news. What do you think was the best thing that people said and the most useful thing that people did?
I think as long as you say something, it's important as opposed to not saying anything. That I just wanted people to be around and to be sensitive to the fact that I may or may not want to talk about it, and that I just needed to be around people.
Yeah.
We had people, but Mike had someone post when he said it, he put on his posts, he said he had lymphoma. And we got one person saying, oh, as long as don't have chemotherapy. Someone who said carrot juice, or, you know, tried to sell us on this carrot juice thing. And somebody else who said, as long as it's not non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, because, you know, I've read about that and that's really bad and that would be just da-da-da-da-da and terrible. And, in fact, it was that time.
So what did you learn from Emma?
I think the interesting thing for me was that they didn't have a home to go to. I wonder whether their circumstances would have changed if they did have a more practical location in the UK, because she said her in-laws lived out in the country, or whether they had a home in Australia that they could go to, whether they would have gone home or whether they would date. It's almost like was made for them.
I think they're a bit like you, Says, in that they have a home but they rent it out.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, see, yeah, if that happened, yeah, we couldn't go to our home in Melbourne, and I'd be more alone in Melbourne than I would be here.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And then my parents, you know, we've got in-laws that live in the city, so, yeah, it's just, and I've always said Doha is my home, this is where my family is, so
yeah.
I understand why they, and he was obviously getting fantastic treatment, but I've heard quite a few times in a private health system here in Doha, it can be a nightmare.
Yes, I agree. I've heard that really you want to go straight to a public hospital if you have anything like that. And I think too, for Emma's situation, is her husband worked all the way through it. So he kept going to work while having his chemo and really just missed sort of a few days here or there. So they kind of saved themselves having to pack up and go home.
Which is a drama in itself. Do you know what I mean? That's huge. Putting added stress onto the situation. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
And I also love that she was talking about her expat friends, because we've talked about this before. Your expat friends are your family here.
And they were relatively new to Doha as well, so she said there were a lot of times that she, upon meeting people, had to then tell them that her husband was sick. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's a lot to deal with, isn't it?
But don't you think that's just such an expat community? We find that we find that new person, and we're so much more open and giving than we are back home.
Yes, and it's also that necessity. You know, I had an email sent to me a few days ago by a girlfriend who said, look, I don't know if you want to know this, but such and such, who was a person I'd met just a couple of times, such and such has just returned from the UK after having a mastectomy. She's also got breast cancer. She's going to the cancer centre in Doha. Do you want her email to talk to her? And I was like, yes, definitely. And then I emailed this woman immediately and said, I've got cancer too. I'm also going to go there. Can you give me some tips on what to do? Now, I don't know if that would happen so much in Australia, because people would go, well, she's got her doctor, she's got her oncologist, there's the breast cancer network in Australia.
Yeah,
so you wouldn't do that. Whereas in the expat world, you tend to go, okay, well, how can I help you with any, you know, finding any services or finding out how you do this?
Yeah.
I had another email from someone yesterday explaining that they had a wig made in Doha, but and the phrase used was, you won't find a pamphlet anywhere, you will not find a website, but I can tell you there is a woman that will come to your house and take a piece of your hair, and then she sends it off to the States and she gets a wig made especially for you, and it comes back to Doha. Yes. Yes. So I think there's all those other...
Match the colour and the type of hair.
Yeah.
With real hair?
I don't know if it's real hair, but I do know people that have used their real hair to have wigs made. I don't think I would be bothered.
Sorry, I really shouldn't have laughed. But I just had a big image of you, like, sweet hair every morning.
No, you should.
Hang on, Sam. We can't record just now. I've got to go and sweep up my hair.
Dear, and you know, they say with the hair loss that you really do just wake up in the morning and it's all there on your pillow.
That's and that's, yeah. And I think Kristen talked about that as well, didn't she, about her. The hair loss.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like about how she said she needed to take control of it, yeah. and I completely understand that.
Oh, just to, yeah. I had a friend next to me, she's was living here in Doha back in the UK, and she said, you know, reading your story on your blog made her want to go and get her breast checked. Now, she's the same age as me, she's 37, and in the UK, in the NHS, they don't allow free mammograms until you're 50. And yet here you are, you're under the age of 50, and we've heard of many other women that are under the age of 50 that have been diagnosed with breast cancer. She has to go privately to get a mammogram. And I just thought maybe our listeners out there would be interested to know what the rules are in other countries. I'm not sure what the rule is in Australia. Is anyone open to getting a mammogram at the breast check clinics?
Well, I think says in Australia you have to be 50 as well unless you're referred.
Right.
So
right.
I think my advice to everyone is to go to your doctor and say you think you've felt something or you just want to be checked, because that's a really, really good point, because if I hadn't have gone until I was 50, I would be absolutely riddled with cancer, because my cancer is very aggressive and it's stage 3. So my cancer, although it was little and caught early, had the potential to be really, really nasty. So, yeah. Do you know, there's a really good someone sent me one of those TED Talks, and it's a woman based in Abu Dhabi who has cancer. And this woman is in Abu Dhabi and she stands up because she's talking to, you know, I guess a room that has a lot of expats in it. And she said, how many of you know how to get to IKEA? And about 99% of the room put his hand up, right? Because that's a real expat thing. Everybody knows where IKEA is because you're constantly finishing, you know, when you arrive. And then she said, how many of you know where to get a reliable breast check from? And barely anyone put their hand up. And I think that is so true, that these are things as expat women we need to still make sure we do. Make sure you find a good doctor, not just for the kids, but find one for you. I mean, when I have landed in so many different countries where I have gone all out to find my children a great doctor and then said, oh, well, I'll go when I get home. Do you? And we all know that when you get home, you do run out of time and you do, you know.
And the last thing you want to do is be at doctor's appointments as well. Because
that's
you want to be enjoying your holiday.
That's right. And, I mean, I'm a classic example of that just recently. I mean, I took my children to the doctor. I didn't take me. I made 4 appointments for them and had all of their bits and pieces checked. So I was just very lucky that someone took the time say, what about you? So I think, you know, as expat women, you need to, I think sometimes because you're constantly on the move and you're not doing those regular things that you would do in a regular world where they keep, you know, whereas maybe the government keeps a sort of track on you and make sure that you're doing things, you have to look after yourself. You have to get yourself to the doctor. You have to get these things checked.
And I think also back when you see it more in advertising and things like that, for skin cancer and breast cancer and prostate cancer and bowel cancer, you see the ads on TV, you see the promotion of, you know, go and get yourself checked. You don't get that here. And I'm assuming that's the same in a lot of other foreign countries where, you know, in Singapore, ads are not going to be in English. So, you know, back home, it's that regular reminder. You know, home, I saw the ads all the time about the easy checks that you can do for bowel cancer and there's, you know, the underway kits that you can do at home. We don't get that here. There's not a constant reminder of, oh, I better go and get myself checked.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's it. That's it in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Okay, Sez, have we covered everything, do you think?
I think I found a couple of really good articles that I'll put up in our show notes, which you can find on the website. Two are quite practical. It's about the first article is in France. Now there's fluent English doctors that can help expats that are dealing with cancer. Because I could think, you know, there'd be nothing more stressful than one, finding out that you have cancer, and then two, being in a country where you don't speak the language. And the language of cancer in itself is hard to understand, you know, not being told to you in layman's terms. So there's now a cancer support group that's been set up in France of English speakers that are going through the French health system. So I'll put that on our website. And also there's an article coming from a doctor's perspective on what expats can do as far as their treatment costs are concerned, and how to get the best of the treatments and their doctors no matter what country they're living in. It's some really good practical information. And then the third article is actually a blog post about an expat from the UK who's living in France and how he dealt with his cancer treatment and what it was like to be an expat with cancer, and a lot of what we've been talking about today, you know, what made him stay in France rather than going home to the UK, doctor's appointments, the language barrier, all of that type of thing. So I'll put those links up on our show notes.
Now, the only thing I think we didn't answer, Sez, was we were talking about what can you do if you're miles away from someone and you can't do anything practical.
Yes.
So I guess, yes, you can just regularly send in messages. One of my favourite things that people have said to me is no need to reply back, because then the pressure's gone. So if someone sends me a big note, because I have an inbox full of notes that I have to reply to.
Yeah.
And it really is quite mentally taxing, because you know you're going to go into the cancer world where you're talking about cancer over and over and over and over and over again, and sometimes you just don't want to do that at the end of the day. You've had enough. So if you know, send people regular notes, but just say at the end, oh, you know, no need to reply, you know, just letting you know what's going on here. But also, it has been lovely to get flowers from people, and, you know, I've had gift baskets of food and treats and whatever. I mean, all of that stuff is really lovely too, and I don't think anyone would ever knock that stuff back, you know. So so send a basket, or send something, whatever, or send something that's unique about you and them. You know, a girlfriend of mine from the UK just sent me a box of chocolates, and they're really, really special little chocolates all the way from the UK. Do you know? Yeah. And they're lovely. Yeah. And so it makes me think of her, and it was just such a sweet and gorgeous thing to do. You know, someone else has sent me one of those colouring in books. And,
those new that everyone's into, the adult colouring books. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Someone made me one.
Oh,
too, like, I know. And so people have been really lovely. So don't, I think it was Emma that, when I said, what should people say, she said, just tell them just to say something. And I think that's the really one. Don't back away. And I think, you know, I had a text last night from a girlfriend to let me know that a mutual friend's mother had died, and I instantly got on the phone, and, you know, the phone rang out, but I left her a message to say, I've just heard the news. I'm so, so sorry. I know you're a really close family, and this is terrible, and there's no need to get back to me, but I'm just letting you know that I've heard it. I'm thinking about you, and, you know, I'll call you later. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have been so quick to do that.
Yes.
You know, pre-cancer.
Yeah.
I think I've learned now.
Because you've seen it from the other side.
Just get in there.
Yeah.
Get in there, do it. People, it's not as scary, I think, as it used to be for me to contact people.
Yeah. Because it is hard to know what to say.
It is really hard. It is. But just say something.
Say something.
So, Sez, shall we move on away from cancer and on to social media and little things? What have been your discoveries lately?
Okay, so I love nothing more than a good dance.
That's true.
At home, Sadie and I have dance parties every single day. Girlfriends, after a few glasses of champs, I decided to recreate All That Jazz by Chicago and put on a full performance for my friends. So I do love a good dance. I nearly had a heart attack at the end of it. I am so not fit anymore. But anyway, there's this YouTube video that's making the round. I saw it yesterday. One of my favourite songs at the moment is Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars. And they've mashed that song with 100 dancing scenes from movies. So from
I've seen the rain
to Dirty Dancing to Flash Dance to Napoleon Dynamite, like any movie where there was a little bit of dancing in it, like back when Tom Cruise was cool in the one where he was in his undies and
Risky Business,
like back before he went all a bit weird. They've got that scene in it, like they've just got it's really, really good. So I'll put the YouTube link in our show notes.
Fantastic.
It's really fun to watch. And now, well, I said we weren't going to talk about cancer, but I'm going to bring it back in. yesterday, Becky Collins passed away from breast cancer.
Good. So you not only brought back cancer, but you brought back someone who died of cancer.
She died. But it really kind of, she was the first sort of book that I started to read when I was too young to read adult books.
Yes.
So I was probably like 15, 16 when I started reading her books. And it kind of flashed back to me yesterday when I read in the newspaper that she had passed away. It just really flashed back to me because they were the only books I would read when I was about 15 or 16. Other than the school book. And she taught me about sex, she taught me about drugs and drinking and, you know, this glamorous side Hollywood and this undercurrent, and the books were fantastic. I mean, they were rubbish read, and I'm not being derogatory in the way that she wrote. It was just those easy reads where you didn't have to think about it. And I just, when I read, I was just really sad because she was such a big part of my sort of formative years reading all of her books. I learned so much, not that I ever did anything that they did in her books, but it was just, I don't know, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
Reading her books.
It's the end of an era, isn't it? And I guess to, you know, it goes back to, you know, people our age used to read Dolly to find out the sex questions.
Yes.
And, I mean, that doesn't happen now because it's all over the internet.
Exactly.
I mean,
like,
kids, now if you're 15 and you want to know about sex, you don't need to go to Jackie Collins to find it. You know, it's everywhere.
Yeah, like I just remember, like, lying in bed at night and reading Jackie Collins. And my mum knew I was reading it. She was reading it. She passed them on to me. But maybe that was her way of saying, I don't want to talk to you about sex here, read Jackie Collins, she'll teach you it all. So it was just that really nice flashback, and I was a little bit sad yesterday when I heard that she had passed away, and she kept it hidden, the breast cancer.
I heard this morning, only her children, and she only told her sister 2 weeks ago.
I loved thinking about all of her books that I used to read. And then lastly, when you're bringing home a suitcase full of tampons, I'm bringing home a suitcase full of DVDs. So
now this fascinates me.
I know, because I've got Apple this TV and iTunes.
Yes. Why would you bring home the DVD of House Husbands when you could download it?
I don't know why. Because we use our Apple TV all the time, but there's just something about going into JB Hi-Fi, which is like this big electronic store back home for them that's not Australian. And I don't know, the DVD on special, sometimes they're cheaper than buying a series on iTunes. And I don't know, I just go and just spend an absolute obscene amount of money buying all of these heavy DVDs.
And
I don't know why I do it.
It is really interesting though, isn't it? Because a girlfriend of mine who probably isn't really tech sort of based, she said to me the other day, because she'd moved back to Australia, and she said, oh, it's just so great to be back in Australia and be watching Australian TV. And I thought, I don't think that as a family we miss out on anything because we just download it. And, you know, there's 10 Play and Channel 9 has one as well, and Channel 7 has one as well. And you can re-watch all of those shows. You can see The Bachelor. You can see House Husbands. You can see Offspring. You can see all those shows. And so I kind of think the world has changed so dramatically because you can listen and read and participate in Australian pop culture from miles away now. Do you know, it's a
Yeah, but for some reason, I just bring those DVDs back and pop them in. So we've been watching House Husbands, which is an Australian series about a group of house husbands in Melbourne. And yes. This is a show that I wasn't sure if Matt was going to get into, but Matt's a bit girly with his TV shows. Yes. So he's become obsessed with it. We've watched all the first two series this week. Like, we've been staying up till past midnight watching it. He's been bawling his eyes out watching it. He's such a girl. But it's just, and what I do is because it's in Melbourne, we then pick out the things because we lived in Melbourne for a couple of years before moving to the Middle East. So I sit there on my iPad on the realestate.com.au looking at how that we should be buying in Melbourne. That's what I do yes. when I'm watching House Husbands. And I get really homesick. So I actually yes. don't know why I do this to myself. But I just watching it. It's almost like we're sitting in Australia when we're watching these shows.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's what I think I get out of it. Well, because of yeah. you, I bought all the Rake series on DVD for about $200. Yeah.
Yes. And tonight on the ABC, there is a special on Australian Story on Malcolm Turnbull.
My new boyfriend.
Yes, and for those who don't know, Malcolm Turnbull is the new Prime Minister of Australia.
And not my new boyfriend. I have a big crush on him.
Also, I have a big crush on him as well. But he, his mother left him when he was
yes.
7 or 8, wasn't it?
Yes.
And so
yes.
tonight.
He was raised by his father.
Yeah, so tonight they're going to be talking about that, and they've got interviews with his wife where they're talking about that, and it looks fascinating. So I was going to say the other thing I watched last night that was fabulous that you would love is the Peter Allen story.
When I was back, they were playing the ads for it, and I was crying in the ads, and I was so devastated I missed it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I howled and howled. I had a girlfriend here last night, and we cried all the way through the ending of it, even though you know what's going to happen.
You know what's going to happen. But yes. I love Peter Allen.
So that's a good one. So any Aussies who are out there and away from home, I'm sure you'll be able to download that one soon. But the Peter Allen story is well worth.
Or I'll buy DVD next year.
Now, I was going to talk about a couple of other things I'd found, but I might save them for next week. But the one tech thing that I would advise is anyone yes. with an iPhone to update their iOS update.
I've seen a couple of people complaining on Facebook yeah. about it.
Look, there's one thing on there that I think is really worth its weight in gold, and I don't think a lot of people know about it,
yep.
is there is a phone, there's a battery-conserving switch now. So you can go into your, settings and put it on battery conservation, and your phone
yes.
will last and last and last and last and last.
Oh, fantastic.
So for anyone out there, go into settings and then scroll down to battery and you'll find it. The other thing, because it says at our house we've always had something called Sonos, which allows us to listen to radio stations.
Oh, it's like an internet radio.
So we've been able to. Yeah. So we'd be listening to BBC One or we listen to the ABC or we listen to whatever. But what I've just realised now is most radio stations now have apps that you can do. So, like, I have downloaded the Nova app, which means that I can listen to Nova whenever, wherever. And, you know, now with your phone, you can just plug them into your stereos as well. So that I just wanted to say that I think that's a good app tip. As well, if you do have a preferred radio station from home,
you can download the app. There's also InTune Radio, which is that you can download any radio station in the world. And that's what we use. We actually use it as our alarm to up with. So we wake up with Australian radio every morning. And again, it just makes us feel
that's,
like we're at home.
And keeps you in touch. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I think,
have
Sarah, that's
everything?
Probably about it for this week. I think we've covered all things cancer. Now, I'm flying back next Sunday, so we won't be recording next Sunday, but we've said we'll record on Tuesday.
Tuesday. It'll be a little bit late next week with our episode, but because you'll be in transit.
But we will. But we will be there, and oh my gosh, we'll be able to sing again at the beginning of our
episode. Are we going to be under the bunk bed? Are we going to be back on the stairs? Where are we going to be season 2?
I reckon we'll be under the bunk bed. Do you reckon?
Under the bunk bed? Yeah, I'd
yeah. I was going to say, when I went to Pro Blogger this year, yes. I had so many people come up and say, oh, I listened to your podcast, or, you know, say something about the podcast. And my favourite thing was Caroline from Champagne Cartel. Caroline was telling me that when she listens to you and us talking with our giggling, it constantly makes her think of Betty and Wilma on the Flintstones and how they and you know how Betty and Wilma sort of used to sit there and giggle to themselves over Fred and Barney? And
and Matt looks like Fred. Matt looks like Fred.
So she said our little giggles, where we have these little side giggles to each other all the way through, she said she just, that's all she thinks about is Betty and Wilma. So I thought that was quite funny.
We'll have to do that
funny.
For Halloween. We'll have to go dressed up as Betty and Wilma for Halloween.
Oh, yes. That's a good one. I like Betty and Wilma. Can you remember there was that other lady that sent us a note, because I always call you Sayers, and there was that woman that sent a note that said she kept wondering who the third person was that we kept talking about, who the Sayers was.
Just me.
Okay, Sayers, I know you've got a busy day, so I will let you go.
Yes, and safe travels for you on Monday.
Yes, thank you, and thank you to everyone who's put up with these terrible Skype and FaceTime recordings. We know that they go in and out, but we'll be back to normal next week.
Tricky. And we can't see when the other person, like just now, we can't see when the other person is still speaking or is going to stop speaking. Talk over the top of each other more so than usual. So we'll get back on track next week.
We will. We will. Okay, Sayers, I'll see you
next week.
Soon.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.